Hello, welcome to another episode of EMJ Live. We are here in South Bend, Indiana, and today is the 4th of July. One of the most impressive experiences that I had when I moved to South Bend, Indiana, 46 years ago in 1979, was the 4th of July celebration. We had just bought a house. We walked from our house downtown. At that point, there was a big hole in the center of town waiting to be filled by a building, which came a couple of years later. But everybody assembled around this hole, which I think was kind of prophetic of what was going to happen here. And we watched the fireworks display. Now, there were all kinds of people there. That's the impression that I had when I was there. This was a celebration for everybody in South Bend, Indiana. So there were people that looked like lawyers. People actually wore things like summer suits or blazers and ties at that point, coming downtown with their families. On the other end of the spectrum, there were bikers from the local biker gang with their biker chicks, dressed in their black t-shirts with black leather jackets, and pretty much everyone in between. In other words, this was a celebration of our belonging to a community, and that everyone belonged because everyone here was an American. And America had an identity that we could articulate, not only articulate, but we could also celebrate. I have never been a particularly flag waver during my entire life, but this was a celebration that gave me a good impression of my first impression of South Bend, Indiana. Over that period of time, we have seen the total erosion of that identity. What we saw in its place was the rise of identity politics, which means the Democratic Party would choose certain groups and confer on them a privileged status in the hopes that all of the people in that group would vote for them, and in the hopes that they had enough groups to win elections. Okay, it was a risky strategy, but this was the strategy that Bill Clinton became famous for. He was the man who really mainstreamed identity politics. At a time when Jesse Jackson was going to the University of Berkeley in California and saying, hey, hey, ho, ho, Western culture's got to go. We didn't need any of the roots that the people brought here with them. We didn't need European identities. We didn't need Polish neighborhoods or any of that stuff. All we had were the new identities. And of course, one of the most favorite identities of all was the homosexual. And this rose to fame until reaching the high point of homosexual identification, which I would say was 10 years ago, when the Supreme Court handed down its Obergefell decision, enabling a man to marry another man. This could never possibly have been in the Constitution, but this type of substantive due process was inaugurated in 1965 with the Griswold versus Connecticut decision, which was about the sale of contraceptives. And the Justice Douglas, I believe it was, justified that decision by saying it was an emanation from a penumbra. A penumbra is a half shadow, which he saw in the Constitution. In other words, he made it up completely out of whole cloth. Okay, the Obergefell decision prompted Justice Thomas to talk about the fact that there's no basis in reality for this. First of all, there's no basis in nature for this. A man can't marry a man. That's not what marriage is. They were claiming this because the homosexual wanted some type of respectability, which his behavior did not merit. That simple. And since all decent people get married, they could pretend that they were decent people by imitating this type of marriage. There's also no justification in the law. There's no legal foundation. There is no foundation. It just hangs in thin air, a monument to the cultural narcissism that has taken over our country, which says basically that you can be whatever you want to be. This was reached its culmination in some respect in Planned Parenthood versus Casey, the mystery clause in which Judge Kennedy says that the essence of being an American is defining your own being. No one defines his own being. God defined our being when he created us, and there's not anything that we could do about it. So oddly enough, we're still talking about this. 10 years almost to the day, I would say literally to the day of handing down the Obergefell decision, we had an interview posted on the internet between Reverend James Martin, the foremost Jesuit proponent of homosexuality in this world, and Pete Buttigieg, the man who's responsible for the destruction of Catholic of American identity in South Bend, Indiana. The trajectory was pretty clear. After you had a parade in the beginning to celebrate the 4th of July, and then at a certain point, because of the civil rights movement, every parade had to be a gay pride parade. At that point, decent people stopped going to parades. I'm not going to celebrate someone's perverted identity. And that's precisely what happened in South Bend. So the decent people, once Pete Buttigieg became mayor, decent people started to shun the South Bend, downtown, any type of public observance, because there was no, if that's a case, if that's a legitimate identity, in other words, homosexuality, there is no identity. We don't have identity as Americans. We have identity that is granted to us by oligarchs if we conform to their pattern of behavior, the one that they promote, and certainly sexual liberation is one of those patterns because it's a form of control. So here we go again. 10 years later, this interview takes place. No mention of Obergefell, but there is this curious kind of cryptic passage in the middle of the interview. So Father Martin says, do you get a lot of pushback from people who say gay people can't be religious or gay people are an abomination? How do you deal with that? Buttigieg responds, there was a whole press conference of people denouncing me, and many of them doing it on a religious basis. A few years later, one of the pastors that hosted that press conference on the steps of that church approached me and apologized, and had gone, this is incoherent, whatever growth he had gone to, and had come to a place where he understood the relationship between who I was and what his faith was. Of course, not everybody took that trajectory. Martin, someone had a press conference after you came out? Who was organizing this anti-gay press conference? Buttigieg, I'm sure you can still find it online. There was a pretty well-known, far, far, far right Catholic figure who was actually living on my block. Martin says, I think I know who you mean. Do you know who they mean? It's me. I'm flattered that a press conference I held 10 years ago is still this bone that's stuck in Pete's craw, and he can't get it go into public without mentioning this far, far, far. How many fars do you have to do here to discredit me? Far right Catholic figure who lives on his block. Yeah, he lived on my block. He grew up three houses down from me, who has been, as I said, been living here for 46 years now. And over the course of that time, I had five children. And during that period of time, Pete, who fits right in the middle of those five children, I didn't know he existed. He never showed up. He didn't play with anybody on the block. He just was a classic kind of kitchen window child who observed the world from inside his house while listening to his father Joe Buttigieg, the man who mainstreamed Antonio Gramsci and Michel Foucault at the University of Notre Dame, talked to faculty members about revolutionary politics. Okay? Now, what is this cryptic statement here? A few years later, one of the pastors that hosted that press conference on the steps of the church approached me and apologized. Pete, why did you use names here? Why did you use my name instead of just calling me this far? Because, you know, I'll tell you, Pete, I can read your mind, because you don't want anybody to look up the other side of the story here. Okay, same reason that you don't want anybody to know who this pastor was and why they held this press conference, hosted the press conference. And the most important thing about this whole story is, hey, that pastor was Black. As a matter of fact, every single pastor on that the steps of that church was Black. As a matter of fact, there was only one white guy standing there in front of the cameras that day, and that was E. Michael Jones, because the Black Ministers Clergy Association of South Bend, Indiana, had asked me to speak for them. Oh, why didn't you say that, Pete? Is this embarrassing? Well, the real reason came out even more recently than his press conference. It turns out there was a survey of the Democratic contenders for the 2028 presidential election, and they listed Pete Buttigieg, who looks pretty high up on the list, until you go across and you see the constituencies and you come to Black, and guess what percentage of Black people will vote for Pete Buttigieg? Zero. 0%. Hey, you've really got to go out of your way to be a Democrat who can't get one Black person in the United States of America to vote for you. And it all goes back to this story here that he's, in his cryptic way, trying to talk about, like, I'm such a persecuted guy. You know, I'm just like everyone else out there, except for the fact that I'm homosexual. And there's this crazy far right winger on my block who hates me because I'm Black, or something like that, the story. And he actually orchestrated this press conference. No, wait a minute. Stop. They asked me, because I had done a public service, one of those things that I used to do with Pete Buttigieg, talking about how no one should vote for a homosexual. Why did I say that? Because narcissism is a fundamental aspect of the homosexual personality. And if you're a narcissist, all you can think about is yourself. You can't help yourself. You know, you live in this kind of bubble in which everything is about you, and about your sexual orientation, and not about the real world as it exists. So it turns out we don't know who was this Black minister that repented. Okay, we don't know that because he won't tell us, because everything he says is filtered through this narcissistic bubble that actually the oligarchs and their press collaborate in creating for Pete Buttigieg, to Pete Buttigieg's misfortune. So, for example, Pete Buttigieg, he announced he was homosexual at the beginning of his second campaign. If he had announced during his first campaign, he wouldn't have been elected. I guarantee you that. The first campaign was nothing but deception on his part and the part of his father and the LGBTQ whatever operation here at Notre Dame South Bend, which deliberately endorsed another candidate, knowing full well that Pete was at that time a closeted homosexual. Okay? Everybody knew this, but when he goes on Stephen Colbert is a paid agent of the oligarchs whose job is to make people like Pete Buttigieg look normal or take seriously the fact that he's running for president. And so Pete would say to Colbert, I won 80% of the vote. And Colbert was, oh, that's great, Pete. Well, Stephen, if you were a real journalist, you would have said, and Pete, tell me, What percentage of the electorate showed up at the polls for your second election? And the answer to that would have been 11%. 11% of the entire voting population of South Bend had been, they showed up. That's about the people, a number of people in South Bend who have patronage jobs for the Democratic Party. Okay. And 11%, you got 80% of 11%. Wow. That's 8.8% of the vote. And you claim that you got a mandate from the people? No, you didn't get anything. This is all pure deception. This is all pure narcissistic fantasy on the part of a guy who made his whole career out of being gay. Because if he weren't gay, what would he be? He'd be a white guy from South Bend, Indiana, a small town, a middle-sized town in Indiana. You mean Colbert would say, oh man, you're a white guy from Indiana. We have to take you. No, of course not. This was the crest of that wave. So they asked me to give the speech. And I gave the speech, and this is in an article that will appear in Culture Wars. So you should all subscribe to Culture Wars if you haven't already. And in that speech, I said, this is identity theft. This is a man who's going to hijack the black population here and turn it into, now it's the homosexual that counts and the blacks don't count, and identity theft. And you're saying there's an equivalence between being homosexual and being black because you claim you were born homosexual and they are born black. And I said, no, that's not true. Everybody knows that's not true. And the black folk are angry. It's not the only reason they're angry. Okay. The first Pete Buttigieg comes into office and fires the first black police chief ever elected in South Bend, Indiana. And then he goes to this big search committee, which turns out is this Jewish operation that ends up giving us three candidates for police chief, none of whom came from South Bend. And the one who got the job was a guy by the name of Teachman, whose main qualification for being mayor or police chief in South Bend was the fact that he was a mercenary in Tajikistan. Hey, Tajikistan, is that like Mishawaka, like the next town over? No, it's way over there someplace, and God knows what this guy was doing. Okay, so I bring all of this up in my press conference, give the speech, and there's the intrepid reporter from the South Bend Tribune who's got his cell phone. There's something going on with this dude's cell phone. So as soon as any questions. So the reporter from the South Bend Tribune says, the Supreme Court just handed down the Obergefell decision, which struck down all laws banning homosexual marriage. And then he says to me, how does it feel to be on the wrong side of history? And I said, remember the mise en scène here. Remember the situation. I am standing on the steps of a black Baptist missionary Baptist church on the west side of South Bend. All the black preachers are standing behind me. And I said, son, have you ever heard of the Dred Scott decision? And at that point, all the black ministers burst out laughing. And I said, if there's ever been an institution that's been on the wrong side of history, it's been the Supreme Court of the United States of America. At that point, he didn't know what to say, and that was the last we saw of that guy. This is the situation here. This is what we're talking about, this illusion, this world of illusion that is the natural habitat of the homosexual, because the homosexual has checked out from reality. One of the most damning incidents here is the way that this Father Martin takes this guy as a role model. This is a Catholic priest taking this guy as a role model for families. What's this got to do with families? It's a fiction that every Catholic should see through immediately. And here's Father Martin taking it seriously, that this guy actually got married and that he can tell us about spirituality because he's a father. What? He's not a father? He's not a father. He's got two kids, much to their misfortune. He goes into this interview by telling about how much he loves these two kids. Well, I don't know how he got them. He won't tell us how he got them any more than they'll tell the world about the identity of this far, far right guy on his block. Okay? But I know one thing, that he didn't give birth to them. I know one other thing is that Chasten didn't give birth to him either, because a man can't give birth to a child. So there's somewhere out in this world somewhere, there the mother of these two children is still there unless she's died. And that's probably not the case. And his talking about love bumps up against reality. Okay? You deprived these two unfortunate children of their mother's love. These two children will never know a mother's love because of your narcissistic fantasy that you are going to be a role model and to show how homosexuals are normal by purchasing what is actually an accessory item that will maybe hopefully get you votes from people who are normal and have normal families, even though no black person will ever vote for you. That's what's going on here. Okay, so we have a debriefing after this happens. Go to the Baptist, one of the churches, one of the ministers, Reverend Jones. And Reverend Jones tells us the story that he got a call from the police chief. Well, this is interesting. He had been trying to call the police chief for 3 years before that, no returning a call. Suddenly, after the press conference, Reverend Jones gets a call from the police chief who wants to talk to him about the roof on his church. Oh, well, that's interesting. In other words, a bribe. But behind the bribe, okay, the bribe is the velvet glove. What's inside the velvet glove? The iron fist that gives you that feeling in the pit of your stomach that basically your attitude towards homosexuality is now something that is of interest to the police force. This is the man that somebody's supposed to vote for. This is the guy who's constantly suppressing he's constantly suppressing this whole story. And at the same time, he's constantly bringing it up. That's a kind of deeply conflicted person. It's the homosexual personality. It's like I'm the center of the universe because I don't fit into the universe at all, because of the choices I have made about my sexuality. And I'm now going to inflict this on other unfortunate people, namely these two unfortunate kids are now going to grow up being deprived of their mother's love, raised, I suppose, man, it's probably a woman in the story somewhere, a nanny somewhere, but anyway, deprived of her real mother's love, living in a world of unreality so that this guy can run for president and pad his resume along the way. Happy 4th of July. That's my rant. Let's hear what you have to say.
All right. Hello. Hello once again. This is the voice of Mike Bajakis, Dr. Jones' assistant. Welcome to the call-in segment of the show. Call-ins are made via our Telegram. Link is going to be in description wherever you may be watching this. And then later in the stream, we're going to read off questions from the chat. Quick rules, be respectful of time, try to be on subject, and don't forget to unmute yourself. I allow you to speak on my end, and then you have to press unmute on your end, then you can ask the question. All right. And with that, let's go to Telegram. Who do we have first? Bubbly Boo. Go ahead. Are you there? Bubbly Boo. Don't forget to hit the unmute button on your end. Bubbly Boo. Nope. Maybe we'll get you later. MV. Are you there, MV?
Hey, Dr. Jones, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Dr. Jones, I'm on Martha's Vineyard, and they're about to have a 4th of July parade, and I drove through the area where it was to take place. I saw a lot of bunting, a lot of American flags. I didn't see a lot of gay flags. I saw a couple on the island so far, but not like I did a few years ago. And I'm just saying, even through June, it didn't seem like it was as big a deal with Pride Month. And I don't know if we're turning the corner. I don't think it's because of morality, but I think, especially in terms of trans, that went from being sort of a cutting edge thing, because how can a a young teen elevate themselves from being just a white kid to top of the heap. You announce you're trans, and it's happened a lot with young girls, especially in cliques in eighth grade or so. They start thinking like this and acting like this. And now you've gotten to the point a few years later, past the outrage, and now you're starting to see, you go to a truck stop in flyover country and the clerk at the truck stop is a trans kid. Well, that's not sophisticated or edgy or cutting edge anymore. Kind of the way cigarette smoking went from being something debonair and sophisticated down to the lower classes. We may be witnessing that now with some of these trends. I'm not saying it's morality, but maybe it's a fad thing. I don't know. I'm just curious what you think.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think, well, I've heard about black fatigue, and then I heard about Jewish fatigue, and now we're hearing about homosexual fatigue. We've had it. First of all, give this guy, you know, enough rope to hang himself. Well, Joe Biden did that by appointing him Secretary of Transportation. And so he just was missing in action for 4 years, missing in action. East Palestine, train wreck, toxic chemicals all over the place. Pete is missing in action for 3 weeks before it even crossed his radar screen. And so the memes started floating at that point. Pete's too busy being gay. Pete's the Secretary of Transportation. He's the man who rides his bicycle to work. I'm the guy who rides his bicycle. Oh, you should know that, Pete. I live right down the block from you. I've been doing this for 46 years. So what does Pete do? Oh, suddenly there's a video. Pete's Suburban stops on the side of the street, a block away from his office. He opens the tailgate and takes his bike out and rides the last block. This is total phoniness. And we're all sick of it. We're all sick of it. So it's going to run its natural course where people are just going to say, I've had enough. I don't care what it is. I've had enough of it. We need to move on, especially as we move into from the Third Republic of all these weird liberation movements into the Fourth Republic, where we're living in a whole different world. God gave him enough rope to hang himself. Just to bring this full circle here, the man that he appointed as a police chief went to a black club, the Martin Luther King Club. Peter Hellen was the only white guy in this club. But anyway, he gives a speech. Suddenly a fight breaks out. The police chief runs and hides in the men's room. Not exactly covering himself with glory. In the black community, okay? And then his reputation is completely damaged. So what's he do? He buys an expensive piece of equipment called the ShotSpotter. Pete announces this will be the end of black crime because it's just a loudspeaker, you know, a microphone that picks up when somebody shoots something, or maybe the car backfires, and the cops are supposed to run there. And by the time they get there, whoever got shot is either dead or ran away or whatever anyway. Wait a minute. It got so bad that this guy had to resign. And then when he resigns, he ends up working for the company that built the ShotSpotter. So it's classic conflict of interest, classic selling out the institutions of South Bend, Indiana to the highest beggar, classic cutting out the local population from any contribution to law enforcement and creating the Israelization of the South Bend police force. That's why we're suffering from fatigue now.
I think Pete probably missed the window to take advantage of what he's doing because the Democrats are having enough trouble trying to keep regular guys in the party as it is. So we'll see what develops.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, MV. Let's see. Who is next? Octavio. Are you there, Octavio?
Octavio.
Are you?
There we go.
Can you hear me?
I can.
Hey, good day to you, Dr. Jones.
Good to hear from you.
My question is not totally unrelated to your topic today. A few days ago, I saw that a man called Zoran Mamani won the primary Democratic elections in New York City for mayor.
Yes.
And that surprised me a lot because I didn't know this man existed in the first place. I'm not an American. I don't follow internal politics. But I did watch a clip where he in the debate, he clearly was a critic of the Israeli atrocities in Gaza. He is pro-Palestinian. And this was, of course, before the elections. I saw this guy has no chance in your city. Nevertheless, he won the elections. I'm quite.
He won the primary. He's the Democratic candidate.
Indeed, correct.
Yes.
But still, it's a huge upset, apparently.
Absolutely.
And he has chances to be the mayor.
So that's right.
What is going on here? What is going on? Because this is New York City. It's not South Bend, Indiana.
Right.
So is this a sign of the what you mentioned in Logos Rising many times is a joke of providence here.
The cunning of reason.
Exactly.
Die List der Vernunft. Yes, it's exactly that. So who put this man in office? The Jews put him in office. How did the Jews put him in office? Because of the way they behaved in Gaza. It's that simple. The Democratic Party has it's the party of the left. The left simply was outraged at the behavior of Israel in Gaza, the genocide, and that's what put this man in office. He got elected because he opposed the genocide. This is reality coming into the democratic process in the United States of America. Okay? It's that simple. So to show you how far removed from reality it was before this, there's a clip that I saw of asking some reporter, asking the whole list of candidates, what's your first act after you become mayor? Every single candidate said, I'm going to Israel. I'm going to Israel, except Mamdani, who said, I'm staying in New York. That alone won him the election. There is so much pent up anger at Jewish behavior that it is going to cause a natural reaction. And this is it. The Jews put Mamdani, made him the Democratic candidate for New York City. Amazing as that sounds, given the Jewish population of New York City. And New York is in many ways the Jewish capital of America. And yet it happened there because a lot of Jews voted for him too. I don't know. I don't have the statistics. A lot of Jews were outraged at Israeli behavior. Okay. Which again brings us to the cunning of reason. We are now, I posted this link and you can see on my Twitter or X account of a guy who gave this really interesting lecture about the civil war that's going on in Israel right now, where you have a far right group of young settlers who think that the Netanyahu is a weakling and can't really stand up to the Palestinians. This crazy behavior is the natural outcome of Zionism. And the natural outcome of Zionism now is that these people, these settlers, are attacking the IDF. If that's not a civil war, I don't know the meaning of that term. You got inside this cancerous ideology, it starts to devour itself, which brings me to that famous passage that I keep quoting from Shakespeare, Troilus and Cressida. Take degree away, untune that string, and hark what discord follows. It will becomes the determinant of what is good, and when will becomes the sole determinant of what is good, the universal wolf ends up devouring itself. That's what's happening in Israel right now.
Yeah, thank you very much. Exactly my thoughts. I saw that clip you mentioned, and the obsequency of the other candidates was so abysmal that I say, I don't know who this guy is, but I would vote for him just for that.
Yeah.
Just for that, I would vote for him.
Well, I think that's the way people, how am I going, first of all, I agree with you. We are in a totally frustrating situation where our entire government is controlled by the Jews who run IPAC, American Israel Political Action Committee, whatever it's called now. Okay, and with the sense of frustration means I have to send a message to someone about what's going on. The only way I can do it is voting for this guy. And that's to send a message both to the Democrats and to Donald Trump. who seems to be totally under control of IPAC right now, to the point of destroying his own coalition, Make America Great Again. Tucker Carlson is warning him, you're going to alienate the people who voted for you. And he seems determined to just press on to the point where now he has attacked Representative Massey, Thomas Massey from Kentucky, the only member of Congress who does not get IPAC money. And now Trump is going after him, calling him a bad man. How else are you going to get the attention of people like this, like Donald Trump, unless you do something like vote for Zamdani, or I predict this is going to happen, vote for Thomas Massey, and he will win. Elon Musk is now supporting Thomas Massey. He's beaten IPAC 3 times in a row right now. I don't think Trump is going to, if anything, Trump has strengthened his resistance. I predict that Massey is going to win. It'll be an embarrassment for Trump, but this is the only way you can reach someone like this.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good to hear from you, Octavio.
All right. Thank you, Octavio. Next.
Let's get this. Is there Brother Mikael? What's Brother Mikael have to say?
Let's ask Brother Mikael what's up. Brother Mikael, are you there? Don't forget to unmute on your end, brother.
Okay, can you hear me?
I can.
Okay, hello, dear Brother Mikael, and hello, Mike. It was unplanned to come on, but just what you spoke about now, about being on the losing side of history. And I just spoke about it today with others. There is someone who is always on the winning side of history. And it is Jesus Christ, because he said, I have overcome the world. And the war is already won. What is our choices on which side we want to belong? On the winning side or the losing side? But the question is this that I have been trying to find out the exact quote from Sicut Judeus Non, that you always speak about, that the Jews are not allowed to take over the culture, but they shouldn't be persecuted.
Right.
And
right.
I have been looking, and we have been looking, and but all that's in the internet and couldn't find in your books either is that is the part where it says that Christians are not allowed to persecute the Jews. It in your book somewhere?
Yeah,
where is the exact quote and reference that the Jews, Catholic Church is teaching?
Yeah,
it's that Jews shouldn't be allowed to take over culture.
It's in the Jewish revolutionary spirit. So if you go to the index and look up Sinan,
it is.
Yeah, it's in. If you look up Sinan, that will be the note that will. You go to that footnote. That is the source for Sicut Judaeus Non. You're not going to find it on the internet because the internet is not scholarly and it's too diffuse. This is a book that summarizes the entire history of Sicut Judaeus Non, which is in one like small encyclical after another. There's no kind of locus classicus for Sicut Judaeus Non. But Sinan, if you go to that note, buy a copy of the Jewish Revolutionary Spirit, go to that note, and then you will find the source, especially if you can find that book. I got it. It's in the Notre Dame Library. That's where I got it. I don't know whether it's available in bookstores, secondhand bookstores, but that's the source of the quote.
So it's not in the Jewish revolutionary spirit itself?
Yes, it is. The note is in there.
It is. How do you spell this? S-Sinan?
Do I have the S-Sinan? S-Y-N-A-N. Do you have the index there?
Thank you very much.
Okay, you're welcome.
I'll find it.
Okay, good. All right.
God bless.
Thank you.
All right. Cool. Thank you, brother. Next, who do we got? I think Jamie was waiting for a while. Go ahead, Jamie. Are you there?
Yes. Hi, Dr. Jones. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Thanks for asking. My question is along the lines of the following. This country, or at least this government, has been at war with many things that are beautiful and good. Even its own nation, I would say, the nation that forms it and formed it. So, taking that into consideration, how does one reconcile patriotism towards this country or the government, given the government's posture towards even its own nation, hostile posture?
Good question. So what we're talking about is the difference between patriotism and chauvinism. or patriotism for a republic, or patriotism to an empire. These are distinctions that we have to make. So, you know, I love, I got this thing, you know, when I'm in Iran, what about America? Death to America. Do you agree with death to America? I said, well, wait a minute, calm down. What do you mean when you say America? Do you mean the ideology, this cancerous ideology that grew out of Puritanism, where anybody you don't like is Amalek and you're Gideon and you have a right to murder people if you don't like them, which is essentially the Jewish ideology which has taken over our country? Or are you talking about the St. Joe River? Are you talking about the people who live on the banks of the St. Joe River? I row on the St. Joe River. I'm attached. I love the Iranians. I don't really want to live in Iran. It's just too dry for me. You know what I mean? It's deserts. There's all these deserts there. I mean, God bless them. I don't know how they live there, but I'd rather live next to a river because I'm going to row on the river. I mean, this is all part of what I'm talking about. This is my identity comes from these local communities that are basically being plundered and looted by onerous taxation to finance wars that are benefiting Israel. That's got to stop. That's not patriotism. Patriotism is supporting America. America First was a patriotic movement. It didn't want us to get involved in wars overseas, which is what George Washington advised. We've been hijacked. The people of Indiana, are a conquered people, every bit as much as Germany is a conquered people. We've been conquered by the same group of people. And so patriotism means love of patria, which is related to father. You know, this is our country. We were born here. I don't want to live anyplace else. My children were born here. I want a government that represents the people of this country. I'm sick to death of a government that represents Israel because the IPAC has bribed every single member of Congress except for Thomas Massie. Does that make any sense to you? Is that clear?
Yeah, thank you. Follow-up question, if I may. How then should we approach 4th of July? Is it something we should celebrate then?
I would celebrate 4th of July. I would. If by 4th of July you mean what it was back in 1979 when I arrived here, which was basically some type of collective American identity, I would celebrate that. I would celebrate the fact that we, if it existed, that we, the people of South Bend, share a common culture, even though we're different. All of that has been destroyed by identity politics, and the main man who destroyed it was Pete Buttigieg. So yeah, I'm in favor of patriotism, local patriotism, and I would celebrate the 4th of July.
Thanks, Dr. Jones.
You're welcome.
All right, let's do one more caller here, and then we're going to get to questions in the chat. So you guys start typing those in now if you have any questions. Okay, last caller is going to be Mr. BMT. You there?
Hello?
Hello.
Good evening. My question was regarding, I don't know if you saw, I think it was today, Donald Trump was talking about the Big Beautiful Bill, and he talked about like some policy that would prevent like usury, I guess, in some capacity. And he talked about like you can go to sometimes a fine banker who will lend you money, or to in some cases Shylocks who will lend.
Okay, go ahead.
Right. Yeah. He said Shylocks, and I was like, does Trump know who this is? But
and then he said,
anyways.
And then he said, no, I don't know who it is. He has never apparently watched The Merchant of Venice, doesn't know who Shylock is. This is just, he's a New Yorker. And a New Yorker, the term for it is a Shylock. Shylock is a term for usurer. He doesn't understand the whole Jewish thing here. This is funny. This is a guy who, it's a guy who's not, what can I say? I don't want to be offensive here, but he's not a cultured guy. He's not an educated guy. He doesn't understand the roots of the things, words he uses. He's a New Yorker guy. That's what he is.
Right. And when he got asked about it by the press, he basically like said that he thought it meant someone who charges like high interest rates.
No, that's true. That's true. He's right. He's right.
And it's so self-defeating to say that.
So you're against you. This is just funny. Okay. Thanks for bringing it up.
Yeah. Thank you. Just one more question, if it's okay.
Sure.
Did you watch the Dinesh D'Souza versus Nick Fuentes?
No, I didn't watch it. No.
Okay. Okay. Thank you, and happy 4th.
Yeah. Same to you.
Alrighty. Cool. Calls today. Let's go to the chats now. And first, let's see. It's going to be Rumble. Andromeda asks. Marriage is for legitimate children. If you are not interested in having legitimate children, what would be the point of marrying?
Yeah, you're right. Marriage is for legitimate children. What does it mean to be legitimate? It means that your parents accept you as their child and accept the responsibilities that go with it. People should not be having children outside of wedlock because these children will invariably be neglected. And that's bad for society. So yeah, marriage is for legitimate children. Yeah, you're right. This is also the issue with Pete and his buddy there, who claim to be parents when they're not. These are not legitimate children. They're not coming from a marriage between a man and a woman, and so their upbringing is in danger. Fast forward 20 years from now, and I guarantee you we'll see problems here.
Okay, let's see. Next question was on Cozy from Derek Chavanaugh's knee. EMJ, when are you and Nick making friends again?
I'm not an enemy. I've never been an enemy of Nick Fuentes. It's called fraternal correction. When I think he's confusing people about the difference between being white and being Catholic. Fraternal correction means I'm your real friend, you know, because I'm telling you the truth about what you're doing. The alternative to that is a bunch of sycophants that will just lead you into a disconnection from reality. I've never been anything but a friend to Nick Fuentes.
All right, next question. Carlos Marcus on Telegram asks, given the cultural basis of Whig history in the USA, could a anti-LGBTQ political party be possible in this nation?
Sure. It's kind of thin, though. I mean, you know, that's not really a broad... You want a political party that has a broad base. That's not really broad enough. I would say for a political party. But I think an anti-Jewish party would unite large segments of the population. I think that is viable. That is possible. That is plausible.
Elon Musk had a poll about making a new party, calling it the American Party. Supposedly 20% of people or 40% of people polled were all for it. Do you think a party like that could kind of turn into an anti-Jewish party?
No.
No?
Okay. Given who Elon Musk is, he's never been able to articulate the issue very well. I don't think he's the man to do this. I mean, his mind has been captured by this weird fantasy of going to Mars, which has no... It seems to me the only plausible explanation for that is he wants to continue to have government subsidies for his rocket ships. But other than that, no. I don't see him as... I mean, you know, yes, he understands the need right now. We got two parties that represent the oligarchs, specifically the Jewish oligarchs, and we have no party that represents the interest of the American people. That's the problem. You're right. That is a serious problem. Trump was supposed to be the solution to this problem by re-articulating American identity, make America great again, but he's too incoherent. He's a pawn of the IPAC every bit as much as every other politician is. If I'm wrong, Donald, then just tell me why you called Thomas Massie a bad man and you're working to have him unelected. So yeah, the need is there. I'm not sure Elon Musk can articulate the basis for it though.
Okay. From Hayden Smith in Telegram, how does EMJ feel about the conversation? How does EMJ feel about the conversation about Roman Catholics think Muslims are worshiping God according to the Magisterium?
Muslims are worshiping God according to the Magisterium. No, Catholics and Muslims worship the same God. That is in the Catechism, which means it's part of the Magisterium of the Catholic Church. It's always been the traditional position. St. John Damascene said that Islam was a heresy. So yes, we worship the same God because we're both monotheists, okay? You can only worship one God if you're a monotheist. What differs is our understanding of God. And so we have the fullness of that understanding because we understand the Trinity. The Muslims do not have that fullness of understanding. And if you want to understand the consequences of not having that fullness of understanding, read the chapter on Islam in Logos Rising, and you'll understand that this is, even though it's an article of faith, it's necessary if you want to understand the universe. Talking about the Trinity.
Next question here from Songaholic on Rumble. Father James Martin is not a low profile personality. Pope Leo must know about his heresy. How long before the Pope should be held responsible for not doing anything about him?
Good question. What is the Pope going to do about the Jesuits? The Jesuits are out of control. The homosexuals have taken over the Jesuit order. The fact that James Martin is their the poster boy for the Jesuits means that it's one of their main crusades in life is the mainstreaming of homosexuality. This is totally incompatible with the mission of any religious order, especially a religious order that takes an extra vow of loyalty to the Pope. So the Pope could simply step in and bring the general in here and say, you guys take a vow of obedience to me. That means you've got to suspend Father Martin because he's giving scandal. If they don't do that, okay, I'm suspending the entire order. It happened once. It can happen again. The Jesuits are suppressed in the 18th century. That was bad. It should never have happened. The Jesuits are a source of scandal right now that the Pope is going to have to deal with. When he deals with it, you have to ask him. I don't know. It's like the Jewish question. We have to deal with the Jewish question. Nobody wants to talk about it, but we got to deal with it. And so your papacy will rise and fall on your ability to deal with the actual situation rather than avoiding the question that everybody is talking about.
All right. And it's you had to get going, right? 5:53. One more?
Yeah.
One more. Here we go. Maxed Out Bear asks on Rumble, Dr. Jones, the vast majority of the world's Zionists are Christians. Do you see any way for this paradigm to be changed when Zionism is essentially baked into mainstream Christianity?
It's not mainstream Christianity. First of all, I'm talking about mainstream Protestantism is not Zionist. Mainstream is Episcopalian, Methodist, Presbyterian, Lutheran. And then when you get to the other end, they're all taken over by homosexuals. The other end of the spectrum is the Baptists down, the evangelicals, that sort of people. They are totally controlled by the Jews through this crazy Scofield Bible theology. So it's going to have to come to a conversion. Now, the man who does true news, what's his name, Wiles, Reverend Wiles, he's a convert. He woke up one day and realized this Christian Zionism is crazy. This is what's going to happen. You'll have to have a conversion. And the moment, I'm saying the change from the Third Republic to the Fourth Republic, I'm saying one of the main casualties of that, one of the main categories that will not make it into the Fourth Republic, is Protestantism. It's evaporating. We just got a story from Sweden, a really good interview with a guy, a Ugandan, who's talking about how the Swedes need to become Catholic. If this is what the African immigrants are like in Sweden, well, God bless them. This is God's providence, bringing the gospel back to Sweden that they abandoned 500 years ago. It's evaporating. That means at one point you're going to be faced with a choice. Do I become a homosexual by joining the Episcopal Church, or a homosexual sympathizer, or do I become a Zionist lunatic by joining all of these Hagee-type sects in Texas? That's the crisis that's facing Protestantism, and it's our job to testify to the truth and the truth of the Catholic Church.
Well, there you have it. Thanks again, everyone. EMJ Live is every Friday at 5 Eastern Standard Time. Unless it's not. If you're not already, please subscribe to Culture Wars Magazine at culturewars.com. And all of Dr. Jones' books can only be bought at fidelitypress.org. Make sure to subscribe to Telegram, the Cozy Gab. Like the video for Rumble. We're doing good with those likes. Keep that up. Final words, Dr. Jones.
Yes. God bless America.
God bless America. We'll see you guys next week. Happy 4th.